another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my very special guest, Timothy Wisniewski, former member of the Charismatic Movement. Timothy, it's good to be back and to talk about all things messed up in the Charismatic Movement. there's so many people are asking me, how do you come up with content? And I'm like, have you not seen what this movement is like, man? This is a never-ending pile of, well, I'm not going to say what the pile is, but I'll let you say what the pile is. Maybe you could introduce yourself for those who don't know you.
Hey, everybody. It's good to be back. I'm Timothy. As John already mentioned, I am a former pastor in the Charismatic Movement. I grew up going to Charismatic churches all throughout Northwestern Illinois, from Maranatha to Assemblies of God, and then to a non-denominational Pentecostal Charismatic church with an emphasis on the gifts and prophetic words and all that stuff. So that's my background. Now my wife and I really minister to unchurched people or people who are hurt by church, mostly folks that were hurt by church. And we have an emphasis on the ancient Near Eastern scholarship of the Old Testament all the way up to the Second Temple period. And we rely heavily on biblical scholarship for that.
People who were hurt by the church. So what you're saying is you have a never-ending pool of people to help, while I have a never-ending pile of something that you didn't tell me what is yet.
Well, it's a pile of hoo-ha. And I think a lot of people, I don't know if I come off wrong, I almost had a hat that said not for everybody, but this one says free indeed. But somebody made a statement on the last time I was on, and I appreciate it. I read all the stuff and the feedback, and they said, well, they were talking about the arrogance factor, and they said, do you think that you're approaching the charismatic now, like the way you view the charismatic, with the same arrogance that you used to view the quote-unquote dead churches that we talked about the last time I was on? And yeah, I could absolutely be an arrogant jerk, like, for all I know. I'm continuously evolving in the way I interact or respond or whatever. The difference is I was intimately acquainted with the charismatic movement for decades, whereas I was not intimately acquainted with any other church or denomination whatsoever. I knew of them. I knew about them. I thought I had a handle on them and where they were wrong about everything. But my perspective and my approach to that was inherently wrong, in my opinion. So that would be the difference in my response to that sort of inquiry. But yeah, I could totally be, you know, like, give me a couple of weeks, we'll see where I'm at.
I have learned over time, and it's hard to do, I've learned not to form an opinion, because when you do, you trap yourself in a box. And I should caveat that every person is going to have an opinion of some sort, but if you try to leave the door open for other opinions, I guess that's probably a better way to say it, you don't trap yourself in this box that keeps you from proceeding forward and learning and growing and becoming better. I look at my past self. I mean, I'm one of the few people who will openly admit I believed a man from Indiana could create a squirrel with his mind. I believed the man had a magic sword. I was 37 years old believing this, and that's pretty silly. That was my opinion back then. I've learned, well, I need to open the box to that opinion might be wrong and go forward like that. So I have, and it's opened the door to all kinds of things that I never really thought possible. For instance, I don't know if you saw it, the government just released this, they call it this trove of reports and documents on the UFO files. I get in there, I've got an open mind, I'm thinking, okay, the government's being transparent. I'm reading through it, I'm like, I knew this stuff, everybody knows this stuff. Why are you releasing the stuff that we know? Give us the stuff we don't know. But I don't know if you caught it, right before that, leading up to that, Perry Stone says, they're about to release the big one. As soon as they do, people are going to be falling out of Christianity. I can't remember his exact words. Something to that effect. He says, they just held a private meeting, the government officials, with a group of ministers warning us this is coming. And I mean, he's spreading all this fear, like this big thing's coming. Actually, to be fair, it did get me excited. I was like, oh, wow. I wonder what they're... what are they going to... So I get there with his background. I'm like, no, man. There's no way that meeting ever happened. there's no information here. But it got me to thinking, because my box wasn't closed, it suddenly struck me, in all of the recesses of my mind, going back into the nonsensical 40s, 50s, and 60s, which is the doctrine I grew up with, we had UFO doctrines. We had a lot of them. We had UFO preachers. We had big name preachers that were preaching and spreading UFO. Christ for the Nations, the founder of Christ for the Nations, was publishing UFO books. And I have some of that research, but I never really connected it all together until Perry Stone said this, and then it suddenly struck me. What they're doing is the same thing they were doing back then. They know some information is going to come out. They know people are going to critically think. The moment they critically think, everything that they have taught unravels. You cannot allow critical thinking, and their teaching can't coincide. The moment it does, people leave. So it was like heading the enemy off at the pass.
a preemptive strike, if you will. It's kind of interesting that you mentioned that, because I was just listening to a podcast, and I like fringe stuff. I like stuff like that. Like, I like UFOs. I like, Bigfoot, and it's kind of a running joke in my family. And I just think that stuff's entertaining, but I'm a big fan of the unknown and the unexplained, because I just think it's a part of being a human. It's part of creation, you know, discovering new things. I mean, I don't know how many missionary groups that have discovered new species of insect because they were there in the midst of them. So, but they were just talking about that meeting, because Perry Stone has said something, it blew it all up. And one of the guys who I think Perry Stone was trying to quote, he just had to come on and say, hey, it wasn't like that at all. I invited a bunch of pastors to my Airbnb to talk to a couple of guys about this. And the information really wasn't anything we didn't already know, but it was mostly like to make sure pastors are aware and that we could point back to Jesus. So the other end of that is the sort of the high conspiracy side of, just like you said, everything's going to fall apart. People are going to leave the church in droves, and this and this and that. So it's kind of, it was just a little ironic that you just said that because of this, because it's now, right? It's in focus. It's the new pop culture. You know, it's another, hey, don't look at the Epstein files. There's aliens over here. Like, I mean, we're pulling out all the hats here. Forget about gas prices, aliens. So that stuff cracks me up, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I, not to give too many secrets, because I'm actually working on forming that into a podcast, I want to go through all of the... I've come across several different UFO pieces across the history I've done. I want to combine some of that and tie it back to what Stone was trying to do. But one of the things that hit me, and I had forgotten about this entirely, but there used to be this magazine called Fate. And think National Enquirer mixed with UFO, mixed with who knows what all else, spiritualism, occult.
Yep, I know about Fate.
Weird stuff, right? The Voice of Healing magazine actually published and copied, like printed article, this is from Fate, right there in the magazine. And what's funny is, I think there might have been a collaboration, because I was going through the timeline, I was piecing it together, the shift in the tone of Voice of Healing changed the moment they started publishing Fate images.
And fascinating.
The very first Fate image I found was a UFO picture. So
that's very interesting. Well, I mean, you can get into the weeds with it too. I mean, there's some pretty good documentation out there that certain clandestine alphabet agencies were working on bringing certain mostly charismatic groups into sort of like a psyop culture, and using their end times belief to promote certain things. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But it's really there, and they are well aware of how persuasive those messages can be.
Absolutely. I've got some documentation on that actually in the book, Weaponized Religion from Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad. I've got some books, some quotes there by Nixon. He's saying that you ministers, and he's talking right to the Full Gospel Businessmen's Breakfast, which took place right after the National Prayer Breakfast held by the family, the Fellowship International. He's telling them basically the battle that we're facing today is the battle of the minds, and I'm paraphrasing greatly, but he says something to the effect, we need you ministers to go out and sway the minds. And right after this, not long after this, is when all the weirdness really hit. Some of the bigger prophetic nonsense came into the movement. And I started looking through, again, not to hijack your podcast and talk about UFOs, but...
I'm about it, man.
I started thinking back through, I don't know if you've seen it in Branhamism, there's this big cloud ring, and it's in a lot of churches. I remember walking into churches, and you'd have Branham's photo on the left side, usually the left, the cloud photo on the right side, usually the right. And you'd walk in, and there'd be the pulpit, and some of them even had the cloud hanging above the pulpit. And we were told that the face of Jesus was in this cloud. Well, what happened? There was a, like all mythologies, there's a beginning that begins kind of commonsensical. Somebody photocopied that and gave it to Branham, because Branham had gone out hunting there. When a photocopy was made with another sheet that had Hoffman's head of Christ behind the paper, so when the Xerox machine copied it, it literally did have a face of Jesus in the cloud. And so that began to spread, and some of them were they'll argue to the, you know, to the moon and back, that to the moon and back, kind of funny, that Jesus was actually peering down from the heavens in this cloud. Well, the cloud was the result of a Thor rocket detonation. They were doing missile testing, right? This was right during the era whenever they were really scared that Russia was going to invade. They were setting up the missile defense system. The Thor rocket was part of that. And part of that weirdness, you've got three areas. You've got A, the unexplained, what they call them now, UAPs. We don't know what this is. You've got B, there's some secret things that the U.S. government is testing, some of which may or may not work. And you've got C, these lunatics that are like Fate magazine, I was caught up with a green alien. Interestingly, the I was caught up with a green alien turned into people like O.L. Jaggers, who's preaching, I know where those people are going. They get taken up by the aliens. That kind of doctrine was in the Latter Rain movement.
Oh, man. No.
And I'm talking, Jaggers is a big name. It's not like this is a small name. So, bottom line, again, not to hijack your podcast, there is so much weirdness in the movement that you almost can't top the weirdness with even the report that the United States government knows that there are unexplained phenomena going on in the skies.
I can't deny it. And I think the movement leans towards that because everything is, you know, so spiritualized And you've talked about it, you've covered it at length with, I can't remember, it was a woman recently who, to, you know, her mother, she grew up, everything was a demon. And man, that episode resonated so much with me because I grew up with some of that. Like, you know, everything was the devil or it's an evil spirit or, you know, if I raised my voice to my mom and had a difference of opinion, well, that's the devil speaking, you know, that she would say that to me. And for a long time, I was hard pressed to find out what that actually meant, but she grew up, you know, the same thing in a Pentecostal movement. And, you know, we've had experiences with things that I would think were probably preternatural in nature, but it's not everything all the time. You know, I think the devil gets blamed for a lot of stuff that men just do, you know, and it's a very convenient out. It kind of usurps a little bit of responsibility and even consequence sometimes. I mean, we're seeing in cover-up culture what that, you know, the damages of that. And, but we really are primed for it. The people in this movement are primed for that. Everything from, you know, you go back to the Derek Prince era, right? I think it was Derek Prince I remember watching videos where like everyone had some kind of a demon and there was these mass deliverances in the video that took place. And it was like, and if you're feeling weird about this, it's because of a demon. And it's like, oh no, this is kind of weird. Do I have a demon? And you think because this guy's got an international ministry, you think because, you know, he has a background, you know, and whatever it was, like, oh, well, it must be true. And you're seeing people have very visceral reactions in the audience. They're falling over, they're crying out, they're doing whatever. And it appears like there is some ministry taking place. But when you understand the dynamics of psychology and the way you can really manipulate situations, and you've talked about it ad nauseum, right? With the music, with everyone's there to have a spiritual encounter. You don't go to these events not expecting the Spirit of God to not be there and to move. So in some way, every little thing that continues, that like compounds itself on top of each other, it's an affirmation to whether it's your subconscious expectations or whatever it is. And that's not to say miracles and things don't happen in these places, but we're also priming ourselves for anything else. And there's no, like, what is the plumb line to say what is of God and what isn't God? And my own personal experience, the plumb line to, you know, that I've seen was like, oh, well, it happened in a church, it must be of God. Or it happened under this minister, it has to be of God, you know, until later on down the line, somebody falls into error. And, you know, that. But it wasn't at that event, you know, it was someplace else. So it's like we really do prime that pump.
I remember whenever I first became a parent, my son ran and jumped into one of these, I don't know what you call these things, these inflatable castles that had a million balls inside.
Bouncy houses.
Bouncy houses. So I had to go get him out of one. He was crying, something was up. I got in and didn't realize how hard it was going to be to move through there with a million bouncing kids, right? Picture that, and picture you've got a wiffle ball, and say my son had brought a wiffle ball in there and lost it and started crying, Dad, I want my wiffle ball. You know how hard it would be to wade through all of those balls and try to find a wiffle ball, right? Well, what it reminds me of, people ask me, do you believe in the gifts? Do you not believe in the gifts? They're not even asking the right question, because it's as though the real thing is the wiffle ball that's trapped inside of all of these million other distractions. And what they're asking me is, do you believe in the distractions? Well, heck no, man. I don't. There's no way I'm going to believe in the distractions. But that's what it is. And I had a lady on recently. She was talking about, I can't remember what she was going through, something severely traumatic. And she said they did the deliverance thing on her. She came up and they told her, well, I hate to tell you, sister, but you've got a coven of witches after you. And she's like, oh my gosh, how did a coven of witches find my name and why are they attacking me? Well, that's the way, that's the imaginary ball that they're throwing at you, right? That's not the real thing. And what they're doing is they're trying to portray the idea that you as the average person must go to the guru. It's really the guru type religion. You have to go to the guru. The guru is going to tell you how to be healed, tell you how to overcome the coven of witches. I can't believe I'm saying that on a podcast. But for me, it's just so fake that if you were to ask an average person on the street who's never been involved with any of this movement, who believes that there is a God, who isn't really Christian yet, but's entertaining the idea, hey, would you like to come to my religion? We're going to protect you from the covens of witches. What in the world are they going to think when you tell them this, right? But if you grew up in this movement, you're like, well, that sounds legitimate.
I have stories of things that I've been personally involved in. We had, and it's interesting to see how certain scenarios played out with certain individuals, because the individual going, you know, like, I'm all about like helping, like, yeah, man, like, sure, let's go cast a demon out or whatever, you know? And that idea was not foreign to me because of the way I was raised. And, but the individual who was asking me to partner with them, they had a very word of faith background, but it was also prosperity gospel background. So there's a neighborhood near me, a town, it's very affluent. Like, if I said it would give some things away, but Professional ball players have lived there. There's a lot of horse, like multi-million-dollar horse stables and stuff like that. And it's a high tax area. And this individual that allegedly needed our help was in a very rich, affluent area. And so I go, okay, well, I don't care. I'm just going to go. You know, people need help. I'll go. But the guy that I was going with, I think that he had hey, man, to him, everything was this opportunistic thing. Like, if we get this person saved and delivered, they're going to start giving to the church and they're worth millions and millions. The motive was what makes the man. And I didn't get it at first. And then he's like, oh, you know, just we'll pray over this kid. And I'm trying to find out, like, well, dude, what's wrong? You know, like, and the mom's all wrapped up in this stuff, you know, and I just asked, like, well, when did this stuff start? And personally, I think the kid was doing drugs in secret and he had a bad trip and he went kind of nuts. And, but I was still willing to pray for the kid, but we're going around, we're talking with the dad all of a sudden, and there's all kinds of crazy trauma in this place. And he's got millions of dollars in cars. He's like, dude, he's like, you know, I can make $1 million tomorrow. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. But, you know, like this thing with my kid, I don't get it. And I watched the guy who I was with, his eyes lit up. And he's just like, oh, man, if we can get these people in our church. And like that was, and he had I want to believe he had the best intentions, right? Help this kid, help our church. They'll start coming to our church. They'll become tithers, yada, yada, yada. But I can't tell you how many times I saw something like this in that movement as a motivation. And that's from overseas to, you know, missions trips to people because of their background, because of what they believed and what they bought into as far as a prosperity gospel or a word of faith or the spiritual gifts thing. And you always have some sort of beneficiary, because you hear these guys will come in, these missionaries or these ministers will come in, they'll do a conference at your church and they'll say, you know, well, there was a man there who God knew was a multimillionaire and he's a benefactor he's a benefactor now and he supports our ministry. Well, you got a struggling church with like 10 different pastors there who have all of struggling churches, and they hear something like that. They think, holy crap, if I get X amount of miracles under my belt, then man, I could have $1 million coming in here through tithes or this guy will pay for a private jet or whatever it is. And it changes the motive into something else than what the gospel actually is.
Money changes everything. I've noticed that. I mean, that's why Fate Magazine exists, and that's why Voice of Healing would publish Fate Magazine. That's how weird this gets. But
that is so weird.
I grew up watching The Favoritism, because I was having, you know, there are tiers, and having been in the upper tier where I knew my grandfather, I knew him personally, I saw the personal side, I saw the stage side, I saw how everything ebbed and flowed. But I also saw the people who would come directly to his house and give him money. And this is off the books. This isn't going through the church funds. I was watching some large sums of money come in like this. And these were the people that Grandpa liked to call on to pray at the end of the service and say, hey, brother, would you give us the closing
prayer? Would you come and say, give a blessing, give a benediction?
So, you know, you watch how all this works and it kind of plays out. To some extent, as a businessman, I get it. If you run a church, you run a business. I hate to say it, but in the United States, it can't work any other way. That's how U.S. is structured. Got to keep the lights on, got to pay for the water, the toilet, all of that stuff. So you have to try to get money, but the problem is that can go to your head pretty easily. As a businessman, I can tell you the more money you make, the more money you want to make, and the less money you have, the more money you need. So there are all these vicious cycles. The problem for me is that should be disconnected from the ministry entirely. They need, if you're a church, I think you need a separate entity, and maybe not even affiliated with religion at all. Just we're the ones who are going to manage the business side. Give us the management, and don't play favorites. Don't have prophecies to people that make them want to give them their money.
It's a shame that happens. And can you avoid it? I don't know. I mean, it's talked about in the Bible, right? Hey, don't give the best seats to these people. Don't, you know, this is the way things are set up. Like it's a tale as old as time, especially when there's money involved and there's things that have to get done, you know, whether it's feeding the poor or whatever, you know. And the way we were taught, you know, is that if this happens, well, it's God confirming your ministry, right? Because he's providing for you. Well, how do you discern, you know, how do you say, well, it's not, you know, especially when there's bills that need to get paid, you've been crying out to God for whatever. And there's ministers that I've known that they have a lot of integrity. You know, they never did anything. I know a guy, probably one of my favorite people I've ever met. He was a Scottish guy from Scotland, and he just came from the dungeons of Scotland, like a drug addict, whatever, got saved, God moved in his life, and he was a powerful minister. He had people that fly out to his church and wanted a private car to pick him up, and they wanted a certain color, you know, a car to pick him up, and he would drive out there himself and be like, hey, we don't have that car. Have a nice trip back. You know, he would, and he would like, and then I just preached that night, you know, like I respect that so hard. And he's had rich people that try to take him out for lunch and dinner, you know, and be like, and he would stop and say, before you even open your mouth, you know, like until you've been a part of my congregation for over a year, you don't get to have an opinion. And that's amazing. Like, and I've seen the other side of that where people are just like, oh yeah, oh, you want to take me out for dinner? Oh my goodness. You know, and it's just like this subtle wooing, and it's very seductive, especially, you know, like if you come from nothing, especially if, you know, I mean, you know, if, especially if you're a poor old boy from Kentucky, I mean, there's a lot there that could really, really kind of change, potentially change a motivation and have pretty dire consequences. I mean, you really have to keep your checks and balances about you.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. So you mentioned your work studying the ancient Near East and how that applies to religion, the Mosaic Law, Judaism, etc. I recently had a person on the podcast who had left the Assemblies of God and went into Judaism because it interested me. It really did. And people who don't understand the format of my podcast obviously were greatly upset. John had this person on who left Christianity, but you have to understand, most of the people who come from this religion are bruised, and they all go on a journey, they all go on a pathway. Some go left, some go right. The worst of the cases are actually, for me, in my opinion, those that just stop. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to do anything.
Right.
I respect the people that make a move in a direction, because it tells me if they're making a move, they're trying, and eventually they might try to get back on the right direction. So I invite everybody to the podcast. I may not agree with what they say, but I have an opinion. They have yours, and they have theirs, and I let them run with it. But the ancient Near East religion itself, the history, the ancient Near East religions, I should say, yep, and their histories fascinate me, because if you understand that system, understand how Judaism worked in spite of that system, and then understand how some of that system crept back into Christianity after Christianity was birthed, got deemed heresy, kind of got eradicated, and then the New Apostolic Reformation just brought it all back together.
Yeah.
That history fascinates me.
Well, I mean, there's some truth to it. Like, there's something about, like, that guest you had on, and I can't remember his name. I'm actually Jewish. Like, my family were Polish Jews, with a little bit of Scottish and a little bit of English in us. Now, we were never practicing, but I have had family members who lean more towards a messianic Christian philosophic system. So I have a twin brother who, for all I know, was kind of part of a Jewish cult out in Seattle for a while, and became a little volatile. I don't know where he's at now. We're actually a little bit estranged from each other. But, and my mother, you know, she had the little thing on the door that you kiss, and, you know, yeah, we were kind of proud of that part of our heritage. So understanding scripture, and your guest said it, you know, like, it's important to know who the scripture was written to, like who the authors were writing to, the time and the culture in which those writings occurred. It's paramount in understanding like how we should translate scripture, disseminate scripture, instead of coming at it with a very Western confirmation bias, right? Which I can do. And that guest kind of did it too, with, but more towards the Jewish side of things.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I just, you know, I was like, oh, well, well. and I love it. Like, man, like, dude, go for it. Like, if you believe it, and I think you're right. Like, if Jesus is true, right? If Christianity is true and you're pursuing the truth, you're going to come back, or at least you're going to have to confront it, you know, and try and break your, like, I don't think you can break the truth. I think you can break yourself against it. Does that make any sense? Like, I liken it like, so I'm a blacksmith. I don't know if you know this or not. So I'm a blacksmith. I work with metal. I, you know, banging an anvil and all that jazz. And that anvil's not going anywhere. You know, like, I can hit it as many times as I want. I might dent it, but anything I hit between that anvil and my hammer is either going to get upset, which is an actual term. It's going to get reshaped. You're going to, the whole structure that holds it together, the grain structure, is going to get broken apart. And then you reform it and you put it through the heat. And if whatever doesn't survive the heat, you scrape off and you start all over again. So that's kind of the way I look at the truth. That's kind of the way I look at scripture in general. You can break yourself against it. And that's not to say someone's not going to manipulate it or trying to turn it into their own thing, but it stands on its own, especially over time. And, you know, I think there's a reason why the Bible says you judge the fruit, right? What is the fruit that is producing in a person? You know, I think we're going to be surprised. I think we're going to see, we're going to meet some Jews in heaven. We're going to meet some Catholics in heaven. You know, we're going to meet a lot of people in heaven that we didn't think were going to be there. And we might even be surprised when we get there. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, it's funny to me because there is a movement now that is growing in opposition to all of the weirdness that I talk about on the podcast with the history. And this movement is trying to say we must go back to the true Christianity. We must take what we have today and go back to the original. And everybody who's not doing this, they're heretics. And they start attacking all the heretics. That really does turn into heresy hunting. And
yeah.
I was thinking when I came across one of these guys, if you could take them back in time and put them in one of the communities back during that era, they would realize that today's Christianity, even the ones that they deemed not heresy, is so, what's the word, Disney-fied. Disney-fied being, you know how Disney has the cartoon Hercules, and Hercules painted in this fairy book tale, children's movie kind of thing. Well, if you go back to the Hercules, man, it was brutal. They were sacrificing children. They were killing anybody who disagreed. I mean, it was awful. Well, go back and read some of the Old Testament. You find a lot of that in there as well. Go back to early Christianity, who just came out of Judaism, that you find it there. If you were to take them back in time and they were to watch what's actually happening in the Christian communities, no, man, we don't want to go back to the original. I'm sorry. That's where it would be. But I have come to the conclusion, and this is one of the few opinions that I'll give, that if there is a God that is in control and moves a people in a certain direction, those people will progress in a better way. And it's not really the original that you even want. You want the outcome, not the beginning, right? So it's like the journey. I was talking about the guy who goes on the journey. It's not about where he is now. I could care less where he is now. It's where's he going to end up? And mm-hmm. He's taken the first step of his journey. He went that direction. Not the direction I chose, but that's where he went. I know other people who went other... I had a I'll open up a bit. I actually had a witch on my show. She didn't tell me until afterwards, and I'm not going to mention who it was, but she had a story, and she had gone a direction. It's not a direction I agree with, but there were things that I learned her saying that I would not have known, and it actually gave me some puzzle pieces that I could fit in that I would have never had. And that's the beauty of having a podcast like this. If you've got a story, share it, because we all learn from each other. And hopefully, if everybody's on a journey, I mean, I don't promote Judaism in the same way I don't promote becoming a witch. I kind of look at that a little fictional fantasy as well. But they're on a journey. They've taken their first steps. What I want to see is people who share enough where you can realize that those who left Christianity or thought they left Christianity, what they left was something else. What we had was something else. It is,
yes,
in no way, shape, or form did what I leave resemble Christianity, but that's what they called it. And interestingly, they called themselves the true Christians that were back to the original. And I will say what I came from wasn't even Disneyfied. It was like Stephen Kingified.
The brutalist movement. dialogue. Like, we see Jesus talking to people that weren't spoken to. You know, we see the disciples doing it. We see people from other nations coming, and Philip, you know, talking to a guy. We have pagan gods who come to, or not pagan gods, but we have kings who come to, like, Elijah, and he says to Elijah afterwards, you know, after he gets healed, and he goes, hey man, like, I have to take, you know, he was a helper, he wasn't even a king, I don't think. He's like, I have to take my master, and we have to go to the temple of Dagon or whatever it was, and I have to go and help him with his rituals because he's infirm. And he was real concerned about it. He goes, can I take this ground with me? Because he, you know, there's a certain sacred cosmology there and sacred geography where he believed he was taking, you know, the land of Yahweh back with him. And it was a sacred space. He says, I want two carts of this earth, but, you know, is it okay that I go in and take care of my master? And Elijah's like, do it. You know, do it as you see good unto you. And that whole sequence is to show us that it's about believing loyalty. The dialogue and the other cultures, when God comes, when Yahweh comes and he pulls his people out, he separates them from the rest of the nations, he doesn't change their culture immediately. Like, it's over time. He's like, I can work with this, or I will work with it because I'm God, you know, and he's big enough. And so there's some things that, even in, like, the Jewish culture, where, like, when Jesus shows up, he's like, hey man, it doesn't really apply. You've even added stuff, you know, beyond the Decatude. You've added stuff beyond, you know, what Moses delivered. And he comes and he says, but hey, you know, here's a different way. Here's a better way. And he goes from there declaring the kingdom. And so I think we have to look at all this stuff pretty holistically. See what it is, what it's not. And man, like I said before, you know, the moment I got out of, and people will probably have a problem with this, but when I re-entered the secular workforce and I was able to actually talk to people who didn't share all of my opinions or all of my worldview, my life was so much more greatly enriched. And I didn't enter into a bunch of sin. I didn't become a pagan and start doing all this stuff. Like, I still have my beliefs, but what I have now is I have a heart and I have a compassion that motivates me to just open a dialogue with just about anybody. And that is awesome to me, to be able to just talk to anybody about anything and not constantly be worrying about when am I going to interject the gospel and this and that. Like, I'm living the gospel. I don't have to, like, get, you know, my 3-point sermon in and have someone make a decision in 30 seconds or less. And it's just where I'm at now.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big fan of cartoons. Those of you who know me know that I would rather watch a cartoon than anything with real people in it. But I like the old ones because they bring back a time that I didn't get to experience. Oh, yeah. Bluey cartoons. I have seen Bluey cartoons. For those who are listening instead of watching, he opened up his shirt and he's got Bluey. Well, I like the things like Johnny Quest. I'll sit down. Man, I'll watch hours of Johnny Quest, right? Well, think about Johnny Quest. You've got Dr. Quest and you've got Johnny, obviously, but you've got a Hindu in there with you. And they respect each other. They're kind to each other. And sometimes they will go on a mission that they're talking to some other religion. And there's this mutual respect without having to be in mutual agreement, if that makes any sense. I look back at some, even the television shows, I do from time to time, I go back, watch some of the old 50s and 60s TV shows just to get a sense of the culture. And the same thing kind of existed in that culture as well. Fast forward to modern times, everything's entirely different. You do have like, what's a good example? Big Bang Theory. You do have a variety of people there and they come together, but it's more like an in-your-face, we're different, so therefore we're together kind of thing, rather than a mutual respect kind of thing.
Tribalism.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Christianity has evolved in such a way because of this weird mess where you're trying to fight the invisible demon that's out to get you. You're trying to demonize and spiritualize everything. Well, that applies to people as well. A person who has a difference of opinion, they go a different direction, they're demonized. And we're supposed to rebuke them. As a Christian, we must rebuke them. So I'm air quoting Christian. As an air quote Christian, you must rebuke the person who doesn't agree with your philosophy or theology. I was never like that. Inwardly, I like people. I will always like people. And I based most of my being, not on Johnny Quest, because we weren't allowed cartoons, but just simply reading the Bible. Look at David, who's with the king of Tyre. And great friends, great political alliance, the king of Tyre in paganism fully. And David, you know, the God of Israel versus the pagan city of Tyre, which was the port city that was literally responsible for most of the development of the ancient mythologies. It was a port city where the Greek religions and the Roman religions were all coming into port, and it was mixtures. That's why you see so many similarities in the gods and goddesses. Well, this was a city that was entertained as a political alliance by David, and more than that, I think there's even a passage that talks about the friendship there. That's not the kind of thing that this Christianity produces in the NAR. You must rebuke those who are not in agreement with you, and you can never have that alliance or conversation. In other words, if they disagree with you, you can't even accept or acknowledge the things that they say. And for me, this is a huge problem. We are progressing in a backwards way. When I look back at the 50s and 60s, even the television shows and some of the magazines, Christianity had progressed in a way where they did have a mutual respect. They understood differences of opinion. The Christian would not have agreed with the Hindu or the Muslim, obviously, but there would have been a respect and a conversation allowed. I look at the comments that I get on the podcast today, and I think it's just not what it should be. This isn't what Christianity was meant to be.
The factionalization of everything, you know, where you have these little factions, even your own personal faction, you've got this, you know, this whole worldview inside your head. But now, because of social media, because of the ability to become your own literal cult of personality, you know, and you can hide behind the anonymity of certain, you know, whoever you want to present, right? I'm sure there's people that probably just come into your comments and they're just absolute trolls and they have six different accounts and they just, you know, stoke a fire just to be mean. They don't even care. You know, they're just whatever. I mean, anyone who's been online long enough knows that absolutely occurs. But I think, you know, in a greater regard, like, we're not taught, like, the people, they used to have like oratory classes where you learn how to talk, you know, to people, and you learn how to debate and dialogue. And there was a higher understanding of critical thought and how to process, you know, like, pretty good your ideas with as few words as possible, but they were everyone knew what those words meant, you know, and you could formulate entire opinions or entire groundwork for a conversation with certain words. And we've become so debased, really, you know, from, I mean, there's a whole social engineering aspect to all this stuff that has nothing to do with Christianity, but like just as a whole. And then you've got a group of people, you know, who, you know, are weaponizing scripture, but they've got this lack of decorum and in a very black and white view of something that is a full spectrum color. And it doesn't bode well, you know, it doesn't translate well, and it doesn't bode well. And it's not great for holding a dialogue or a conversation.
Yeah, and it's the, you know, the weaponization, it's not even a good word for it. It's like they want to beat you over the head with a Bible, but somebody comes along with a bazooka of truth, and truth always wins, you know. I look at all of this a bit differently than a lot of people. In the history, you can go back and you can see how it's all been politicized. And the way that people have conversations when they're in this type of movement, when they engage with somebody who's not in the movement, they engage in the same way that you would at a political rally, talking about the people that you can't even see, the people who aren't in the rally. You're saying all these things about them. Well, that's because the structure of the sermons actually eerily mimic that of a political rally. The people, I don't know if you saw it in the Pentecostal circles that I went to, you would often hear sermons preached at people, the things people are doing who weren't in the church. And the easiest example is I'm sitting in a church filled with nothing but women wearing long dresses, and the minister rants for 30 minutes about how these women even show up into churches wearing pants, and nobody's in there with pants if they're female, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's how it was. It's like a political rally. You're preaching at something, and you're preaching at the enemy. That's really what it is. To the extent there are certain factions within Pentecostalism that when they mention the word gospel, what they're actually talking about is preaching at something that is the devil. That is their version of the gospel. And it's really, it's the equivalent to the modern NAR spiritual warfare. As long as you can denounce something, you have power over it. You're binding it. They use that word.
Yeah.
Binding it. That's, you know, I get some of the positives from that, but think of the negatives. Now you've got this group of people that are literally thinking that that's tied to Christianity, and therefore when I go out into the public, I'm going to act just like the preacher did behind the pulpit.
That's a big problem. That's a big, or should be. It should be a big problem. I think you're right on as far as political, the way we approach things in a political format. And I'm sure you're very well aware of the infiltration of the America First and all that stuff into, you know, what used to be a social gospel for everybody, especially the poorest of the poor. And big business came in and certain aspects of the government and this and that. And that's a whole nother thing. There's a really good book out there. I don't agree with everything in it, but it was written by a guy named J. Michael Bennett. And he actually was the host of the Future Quake program way back in the day. And it was kind of like a fringe conspiracy, like Christian conspiracy thing. And the more people he talked to and the more he interacted with just regular everyday people, it's like, man, maybe this isn't, like, maybe Muslims aren't the problem, you know, like, and it was, his change of heart was actually really phenomenal. And so he wrote a book called Two Masters, Two Gospels, The Leaven of the Pharisees versus the Leaven of Heaven. Or the leaven of heaven versus the leaven of the Pharisees in talk radio, conservative talk radio. But he goes through the history of the conservative Christian movement and how it infiltrated the church, but where it came from. And you know a lot of that, but it's not only troubling, it's as much troubling as it is fascinating, especially when you look at to where we are today, when you look at some of the sermons being preached behind a pulpit, when you look at the influence of a political system and political ideologies that really have no place in the church, especially as far as the gospel goes, right? The story of Jesus and salvation and what it avails to us. So I recommend people get that if they can and have a look at it. It's just replete with footnotes, he gives all the, you know, his references, you know, citations and all that stuff. So I rarely recommend books, you know, but outside of, you know, the Bible, but I do recommend those.
Yeah, it's like the God that has been promoted by the charismatic movement is so weak that if somebody's not in the same mindset that they are, well, they're lost. God can't save them. God's not going to work with this person. They took their step on the journey in the wrong direction. Well, they're going the wrong direction. God's not going to work with them. I remember the very first church I was in after leaving the cult, I sat down with the ministers and I said, hypothetically speaking, on a remote island somewhere, there was a person who had never, ever seen a Bible, worshipped God, but worshipped what they believed to be the true God, loved their neighbor as their self, put God above everything else, lived in every single way, the way that God would want them to live, but had never heard the name Jesus. Is that person going to heaven or going to hell? And you can imagine the looks on their faces. They wanted to say something besides what they said, but it ended up with the very evangelical, well, they're going to hell, you know. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, it just weakens God, because that would mean that for decades before Christianity had spread around the globe, all of those people were lost. And I've actually heard a sermon where somebody actually said that.
Yeah.
And it really defies things like the scripture, God so loved the whole world. You know, if you understand that God is more powerful than the box that they have put him in, then you understand that you don't want the box that they have put him in. And that's, for me, why I have this podcast. So thank you for joining me.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.